on this episode of Edge of the Web.
I think I'm not alone in actually being really bad at the most important part of conversation, which is listening. A lot of us when we're in conversation tend to jump in. We want to keep pushing our point of view, and we're trying to waiting for the other person to stop talking so we can carry on saying what we want to say. We're not very good listeners.
Your weekly digital marketing trends with industry trend-setting guests. You're listening and watching Edge of the Web, winners of Best Podcast from the Content Marketing Institute for 2017. Hear and see more at edgeofthewebradio.com. Now, alongside Tom Broadbeck, here's your host, Aaron Sparks.
It just makes us joyous to be able to pull out Christmas dubstep and the Christmas jingles. I mean, it just starts the day off right, doesn't it?
It does.
Unfortunately, it's 3 o'clock, so maybe you're starting your day off with the show, and thanks for listening. Hey, we're broadcasting from Edge Media Studios downtown Indianapolis. That's where we're located every week, except for last week. We bring you the latest marketing trends in digital marketing, as well as marketing influencers from around the planet. Check out all the recent shows over at edgeofthewebradio.com, edgeofthewebradio.com. We're powered by Site Strategics, our parent company, focused on the agile marketing experience. If you want to know what that is and what it can do for you, it's results-based marketing and adjusting based on results. Hey, why not just do that? Isn't that what marketing's all about? I kind of think so. If you want to check out what that is all about, go over to sitestrategics.com, S-I-T-E, strategics.com, and learn more. We can give you a free hour on the phone or Skype or Zoom or what have you to kind of sit down and talk about your potential digital marketing success and even get a few cool action items along the way. So you can actually call 877-SEO for web or 877-736-4932 or go over to sitestrategics.com. I'm your host, Aaron Sparks. I'm the owner of the aforementioned Site Strategics, as well as founder of Edge Media Studios. And to my left is the incomparable Thomas Broadbeck, Director of Digital Media. Sir.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag. Okay. We're going German today.
Hey. I was going to say Salve. That's Latin, since we're talking English and copywriting. But I busted out the German. Sorry.
Why don't you just bust out the Lorem Ipsum?
Lorem Ipsum?
Yeah, we could fill the show with Lorem Ipsum just as a placeholder, right? Anybody? Anybody get that? Anybody? All right. Well, the reason we do this show, a number of reasons, and if you are just coming across the show, thanks for jumping in and giving us a try. We do our Facebook Live every Thursday, except for today. Today is a makeup day.
Today's Monday.
Day. Yep.
And it's going to throw me off all week.
Absolutely. We usually do it at 3 p.m. Eastern, so if you want to jump in and be able to comment on the show, jump right there, and we'll certainly answer you and ask questions of our guests. But we do this to be able to unpack concepts of digital marketing and there's so many things to unpack. It keeps on coming at us too, because there's always some new tactics and new understanding that you need to dive into in the digital marketing space. We're talking SEO, SEM, social media, conversion rate optimization, what to do with your website to be able to increase leads. And there's so much out there, and boy, we've had a good run of it. Over 7 years talking to great influencers in the digital marketing space. Blessed to be able to do that. And it really does help us over here at Site Strategics keep getting educated and learning what's happening in the digital marketing space, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great refresher for us, and always love talking to interesting and smarter people than us. And so we have one of those here with us today.
We do have Nick Usborne, founder of Conversational Copywriting. How are you doing today, Nick?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And Nick's coming from Montreal, Quebec.
Yes, sir.
And we were just talking about the weather up there, and it's perfectly fine and natural to have a below 6 or 7 degree day there, huh?
For sure. Yeah, we have a nice chilly winter here generally.
Just kind of trying to process that for a second. So do you ever actually go above zero?
We do. Hey, if you think of our climate is pretty much the same as New York City.
All right.
We get hot and sweaty in the summer and deep freeze in the winter.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why we live in Indiana, right?
We get that same weather.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Maybe not negative temperature, but that's Celsius though, probably, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. See, I was thrown off there. I thought we were talking Fahrenheit.
Oh, you thought we were like up in the Arctic.
No, Aaron, yeah, we're the exactly. weird ones. The Americans are the weird ones, Aaron.
Nick,
everybody else is on
you're
metric.
Messing with my head. Thanks so much. All right.
You're
so.
Welcome.
we're going to talk.
I'm here for.
we're going to talk about some key concepts in content writing and content marketing today. We're going to dive into what conversational content marketing is, or copywriting is, because it's essential to understand in all spaces, not only just from marketing content, but from SEO as well. But first and foremost, we always like to deep dive into some news of the day. Nick, you ready to take a swing at this?
Sure.
All right, let's take you through the latest digital marketing news.
Put that cookie down now!
This week's trending topics.
All right, so we have our first trending topic, and if you have not heard about this, and if you're in web development at all, if you haven't heard of it, shame on you. I mean, WordPress 5. They just released the release date has been announced over on Search Engine Journal. Roger Monty explains it. So, Tom, what are we talking about? What is WordPress 5 to
begin
with?
So, WordPress 5.0 was released last week. Essentially, it is the new housing for what they're calling Gutenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Gutenberg, which
gotcha.
Is where the Gutenberg
That's where
came
you're
from.
Going. Okay.
So,
got it.
Get it?
Funny. Boy, that
sometimes.
Was a long, long payoff there, man.
Just plant the seed and watch it grow. So essentially, WordPress 5.0 got released last week, uh-huh. much to web developers' chagrin. They weren't
delighted?
They were not delighted. This was not a happy time for them, being this close to the holidays. It was not ready, according to them.
Right.
There was many bugs. I think in this article I mentioned there's some 280 outstanding bugs to be fixed before
yep.
they released it. So, and Gutenberg is a different typeface. It's a new, if you don't know what Gutenberg, when we're talking about when we say Gutenberg, it's a new text editor essentially within the back end of WordPress.
Right.
And it strips out a lot of the functionality that WordPressers are used to. Mm. It makes it simpler. Mm-hmm. I've watched a few training videos about it. It's very similar to a page builder
yep.
layout with that.
Right.
There's a lot of plugins that have been, in the last few years, been adding that into WordPress. WordPress is trying to make that more native within WordPress.
I myself have witnessed the complete destruction of a theme by Gutenberg. Okay, here's the thing. Doubling down on that, WordPress also announced that the version of PHP they will be honoring will be PHP 7 by December 2019 as well. So WordPressers out there, we've got a couple double punches here. We've got the new version of WordPress, plus got to check your PHP version out there where you're hosting, because that framework will not be supported by WordPress at the end of next year. So, Nick, what do you think about all this?
I think in a sense it's been long overdue, because like you say, the page builders have been, I'm not an expert on WordPress, I'm just a WordPress user. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of my websites are on WordPress, so I have to kind of keep ahead of the game. And this is something they should probably have introduced a while ago, because the page builders have been coming in and demonstrating there are easier ways to build a page than with the traditional WordPress interface, which has been pretty much unchanged for 14 years.
No,
so they've been really behind the game. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, this isn't a dramatic new introduction. It's just kind of WordPress catching up. And I don't know who did it, whether it was my host or one of my guys, but I woke up yesterday morning and suddenly discovered my site was now on WordPress 5 on the Gutenberg. And I had to go in and build a post for the first time. And I freaked out originally. But hey, 5 minutes in, it was like, okay, that's how it works. And all of a sudden seeing like, oh yeah, that'll make stuff easier. That's more intuitive. This is more kind of naturally what you see is what you get. So yeah, people are going to freak out. And I guess plugin developers and theme developers who have not been paying close attention
right.
are going to find that they've got problems. People who've been lazy with their PHP updates, they'll find they have problems. But hey, if you've got a decent theme and your host is kind of watching out for the PHP, it shouldn't be a problem. And I think the learning curve for people actually using Gutenberg is pretty short. Like I say, I'm not a tech guy, but 5 minutes in, I was good.
Yeah, I mean, it's intuitive, but the problem is so many owners of businesses, so many businesses don't have a knowledge of what a framework is to begin with. I mean, they know they're on WordPress, but they have no idea of the version that they're on. They have no idea of the version of PHP they're on. And I mean, this is going to be a stark reality check here, because a lot of functionality of these plugins are, I mean, you got to check them, because they could very well just stop working. And if you're talking about lead forms and different key functionality of a website, if you don't know this is coming to you, sites could just break, right?
Well, that's always been the plus and minus of WordPress. Is WordPress is amazing because of the huge variety of plugins that you can plug in. Mm-hmm. But the downside of that is things like backwards compatibility and all that good stuff. So that as an amateur web creator, you know, you have to be mindful of things that, say, somebody using Wix doesn't have to worry about.
Right. Well, friends don't let friends use Wix. Just saying.
They use that in their marketing.
All right. The next web from Yvonne Mehta. Google reportedly personalizes search results even when you're in incognito mode. Now, check this out. So here's the deal. They ran a test. Google actually, you know, it provides you personalized searches based on your previous searches, locations, and other factors. So if you want to avoid this and search discreetly without leaving a trail, the most common option is actually to switch to the browser's incognito mode. If you don't know, if you haven't experienced that, up the upper right-hand corner, the little dots there, you can be able to open up a new browser tab or a new window in incognito, and it's supposed to be clean of any personal trails there. And you can actually see on the screen some factors there. The problem is, in the study that was run by DuckDuckGo, they actually say that Google search results are uniquely tailored to users, even when they're logged out or browsing in incognito mode. The study, participants across the U.S. searched a term, a specific term, at the same time while logged out or in incognito mode. DuckDuckGo says that logically the results should be similar, but instead they were unique to different users. So 87 people, really? Well, all right. Across the U.S., searched at the same time, logged out, and in private browsing mode. You might actually think they got the same results, but they didn't. So, Tom, what did they search, and what were the results that they got?
Yeah, so there in that first article, that first picture that Noah's showing here, it says gun control. And so the person on the left, they had, it looks like a news carousel of some sort that showed different news articles than procon.org and different websites were listed. Second one just had Wikipedia at the number one spot, and then in the middle of the SERP there was a video carousel, and then a third person had the news carousel, then a search result, and then a video carousel, then the rest of the search results. So it's just one example that they showed. A little bit further down, they saw 87 people search Google for gun control, and at the same time from across the U.S. logged out. And in private browsing mode, they saw 19 domains ordered in 31 different ways across their study. So Google responded to this. Danny Sullivan, through the Google search liaison, says there's many different factors. They don't do personalization. Location matters a lot in their search results. So an example they gave, as I scroll down, if you're searching football, football means different in the U.S. than it does in Britain.
Right.
And so if you're searching in different parts of the country, Google search algorithm could think that you're looking for certain parts of them, different areas.
Sure.
So Paris is another example they've shown. There's a Paris, Illinois, that's about an hour, 2 hours away from us here in Indianapolis. Maybe somebody here in Indianapolis, if they were searching for Paris, would have some of those results mixed in. So that's why you would see different factors. Time of day also matters. And we've talked about in the past before that Google, whenever you search on Google, you're part of a user test.
Mm-hmm.
You're always on a test, and so things are always changing in Google, and so that could be some of it as well.
Well, just to assert that there's going to be stability, I mean, we heard it right from the horse's mouth that they're undergoing tests at any point in time. You are going to be part of a test group. And I mean, they're changing algorithms 600, 700 times a year, but they're always testing out things. So to have a precept that there's a stability there is flawed to begin with. Nick, what do you think about this test? And what do you think DuckDuckGo is really trying to do there?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think the issue here is not necessarily that Google is surprising us by the fact they're running tests so that even in incognito mode that they're looking to see where you are geographically. I think the surprise is, if I understand it correctly, Google actually said that it will be the same for everyone. Isn't that what DuckDuckGo picked up on? That Google said something that wasn't entirely true.
Right. That's what they're trying to go after. Obviously. Yeah,
so I think that that statement is the story. I think the fact that there is some tracking going on regardless is not much of a story. I think the fact that Google tried to either bury it or minimize it is, hey, I don't think the whole thing is much of a story, honestly.
Yeah, 87 people.
Like I am shocked that a search engine should be tracking me in some way.
Say it ain't so.
I know.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, you're right. It's, you know, when you get down to it, what's the agenda here? Obviously, DuckDuckGo is a competitor and they're trying for, you know, a little bit of leverage and a little bit of exploitation here. But the fact of the matter is, any Google user knows, as witnessed firsthand, that their content's different than their search results are different, either incognito mode or not. It's just kind of the terrain that we're living in, mm-hmm. right? So, you can't have that level of consistency. You can't really expect that, you know, especially if you're throwing users in all different locations.
Yeah, so like you said, I think DuckDuckGo just tried to make it a story just to get someone to say DuckDuckGo.
Yeah.
how many times have we said it today?
I know. Checks in the mail.
Yeah, checks in the mail. All right. Rennie Mala over at Recode. Talk about checks in the mail. Well, that's not going to be the case here. Amazon wants brands to advertise Alexa voice shopping essentially for free. Consumer goods represent Alexa's best chance at getting voice sales off the ground. So Amazon wants more and more people to purchase stuff through Alexa, right? And we've talked about that on the show multiple times. And it wants companies to make that stuff, to foot the bill. So the e-commerce giant has actually reached out to consumer packaged goods companies this year, asking them to include in their advertising campaigns Alexa branding and Alexa utterance, the phrase that you'd say to make Alexa purchase Tide detergent or blue bottle coffee, right? The terms are actually pretty steep here. Amazon's asking for millions of dollars worth of advertising impressions and months-long campaigns on non-Amazon platforms to include the actual Alexa utterance. I keep on freaking out my Alexa in here because of that. Essentially for free, according to emails viewed by Recode. It's likely brands will ask for better terms if they're going to actually do this. In negotiations, you don't want to start with the most reasonable offer. Jason Goldberg, SVP of Commerce over at the digital agency Sapient Razorfish, told Recode. Now, so they're asking for non-Amazon platform advertisers to throw in their Alexa utterances.
Yeah. At the end of a commercial or whatever. But yeah, so in exchange, Amazon will give them data about how well their product is performing within its category on Amazon, as well as some advertising on Amazon sites, stuff they don't have to spend out of pocket to offer. Amazon will also help engineer the brand Skill, which is basically a voice assistant's version of a mobile app.
Right. So have you caught in the and TV advertisements, have you caught them the advertisers throwing out Alexa and triggering the device in your room? Have you caught that, Nick?
I've had that happen on podcasts, which is why I put my phone a long way away. I was talking on a podcast and I expressed an opinion about something. And my Android, Mrs. Google and my Android, the assistant came back and said, "I disagree." I was like, what the? My phone disagrees in the middle of a podcast.
I tell you, it's Skynet.
I know, it happens. Hey, but that story, I haven't read that one. I like Recode, but when you were just talking about that just now, the thing that jumped out to me is when you talked about the utterance. Mm-hmm. So this is what? This is like a voice hashtag, or is it a voice domain name? Do I have to rush out and get the voice utterance for lawnmowers or?
Well, here's the thing.
What is that? Is it like a hashtag that anyone can use, or am I going to try and own a particular phrase?
Exactly. Because, I mean, as I understand it, it's a unique utterance, which is going to trigger your the connection to either a skill or...
Well, if it's a unique utterance, then how do I claim that? How do I register that?
It sounds like a domain name. It does, but we also know that with the gold rush that there was in domain registration, I mean, we've diluted the value of domains because there are so many. There's only so many utterances that can be in the English market and the French market and what have you, right? That would even mean anything to a brand standpoint. So what does utterance make up? Is it two or three words? What's going on here? I haven't even seen the kind of the schema of the structure of an utterance.
I'd like to buy the rights to the utterance insurance. I'll take that one. I'll give you $20 for insurance.
I'll take accident lawyer. You can have insurance. I'll take accident lawyer.
There you go.
Injury lawyer.
We're carving it out right here on the show, everybody.
Yeah, that's right. $20 a piece. Yeah.
Those were the days. Here's the deal is that and this is kind of tying into what we're about to talk about today from a voice search standpoint. We keep on coming back to it is that the home space in which these smart speakers are, it's very singular. You're only going to have one result based on a search query. You're not going to be searching multiple results because it's a transactional moment, and it's not a canvassing and researching moment that you're having with voice search. So it's a very, very limited terrain of advertising opportunity. And if you exploit that and it just, it starts looking like a bloody NASCAR, right? Mm-hmm. Then consumers are just going to push away from the devices because they don't want to have that. I mean, they're starting to trust it as personal assistance and transactions, but you don't want to have that. It's kind of like the Facebook Messenger advertising, right?
Chatbot.
Yeah, the chatbot. Mm-hmm. Those things really just pissed off a lot of people. You're gonna have consumers really kind of upset if you start monetizing the heck out of it. Anyway, that was a rant. We're gonna be talking about voice search today and how conversational content writing comes into play here. So with that, let's button it up. I tell you what, you always want to check out our newsletter. Sign up for our newsletter. Just text to the number 22828, the word Edge Talk. You can sign up right there. Go over to edgeoftheweb.com. You can sign up on the website. We don't use your email for anything else but sending some great conversational content to your inbox, or at least we're going to be doing it this coming week, right?
That's right.
So join us, join the Edge community, and we won't call you Edgers. We got to figure out a different community slang for them. But we certainly appreciate you jumping on board and giving us a feedback into how we're doing on the show. And we would like to hear what you'd and who you'd like to hear on the show as well. So follow all the featured trends over at edgeofthewebradio.com. But now let's deep dive with this week's featured guest.
Now it's time for Edge of the Web featured interview with Nick Osborne, founder of Conversational Copywriting.
So Nick Osborne is with us. He's an expert in copywriting and web writing. For our guests, for our listeners, we want to introduce him. He has written copy for some of the world's biggest brands like Citibank, Apple, Chrysler, MSN.com, New York Times, WebEx, and the U.S. Navy, as well as many, many others. His attributes, he attributes, see, I need a copywriter. That's what I need. He actually attributes his success to conversational copywriting, and he's here today to share his approach to kind of help you write persuasive and effective copy for clients. So, Nick, we certainly have been ready and waiting to unpack this, the entire concept of conversational copywriting. First and foremost, can you give us a bit of your history, your background, how you came into digital marketing?
Digital marketing. Well, I'd been in, I think before we started recording, I mentioned that next year is my 40th anniversary.
Oh my gosh.
I know, I'm so old. So then in 1995, I actually had a farm. Lost all my money there, but that's a different story. But it was a non-profit venture, definitely a non-profit venture. And I thought, hey, I'm going to build a website for this. But this was like in late 1994. Mm-hmm. So I think by the time we got the website up, it was 95. And that was my first taste of the web. And I was just fascinated by it from the first day. It just amazed me. And of course, it was very different back then. Yahoo was around. And we were in the environmental category because it was just a directory back then.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were in the environmental kind of group category. And worldwide, there were 230 websites in the world devoted to environmental issues back in 1995. So everyone emailed everyone. It was just crazy back then. But I just loved it. So I already had like almost 20 years of marketing, copywriting experience behind me. And I suddenly looked at the web and I thought, man, this is a whole different place for marketing and communication. Mm-hmm. You know, my background had been in direct mail and print and TV. And these are classic broadcast media where basically I'm writing promotional messages and kind of pushing them out at an audience. I mean, nobody ever got to talk back to a TV, right? You just sit there and advertising is broadcast at you. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly along comes the web. And man, the web's weird because it's not like that, because people can talk back. And now, but back then it was very limited in the scope. You know, you could do it through chat rooms and forums. But then after a few years, along came blogs. And a few years after that, along comes social media. And users can talk as much as media companies, as much as companies. So all of a sudden, this is much more two-way, multi-way, social conversational medium. So that really gave me, I just love that aspect of the web. That said, of course, 90% of companies still treat it as if it were a broadcast medium.
Absolutely.
But that's part of what I'm about, is trying to discourage companies from pretending that the web is like TV and a medium through which one broadcasts a message at a static audience, because that's not what it is at all.
So you're on a quest to be able to help break that company edifice there, but do you think that part of the reluctancy, the resistance for companies to get into that exchange is the risk that it represents? You, if you control a message, right, or if you just package it up, then you're really not listening to a market that could evaluate you, and you then respectfully change your product to be able to meet the need. Unfortunately, it's a very basic scenario where as long as you don't listen and you don't exchange, you can just keep on plodding away with your own brand and never have to change, right?
You think, huh? So you can't think of any companies that might have had small problems with pretending that they control the message. I'm thinking of maybe one or two airlines that think that they control the message. Because in fact, online, no, you can't. It's a nice idea, that command and control approach. Right. We used to be able to do that. Like when I was writing direct mail back in the 80s and 90s, I could write the beginning of a piece of direct mail and say, you are one of a select group of people to receive this email. Now, in truth, it was like 10 million people, but they didn't know that because mm-hmm. it's a one-way medium. I could say they were specially selected, and they weren't going to knock on the neighbor's door to find out if they'd been specially selected as well, which they almost certainly had been. But the web isn't like that. Hey, if United Airlines puts a foot wrong, which they do on a regular basis, they still think they can control the message, and they follow the old traditional PR playbook of saying, oh, we'll say nothing and it'll go away. Or we'll deny it and it'll go. And it doesn't go away. It just blossoms and grows and it turns into this raging wildfire. And in the end, they have to back down. So no, the web is not a place where you can pretend that you are in control of the message.
Yeah, it's an illusion. Yeah.
Why would you? Yeah, it is a delusion. And why would you do it when there is such leverage to be had from having people talk about your brand? A few weeks ago, you had Jay Baer on with the Talk Triggers, and he was talking about word of mouth. And the web is just tailor built for word of mouth marketing. It's the only mass medium in history that has enabled mass word of mouth. It's never been possible before to get 10 people or 10,000 or 10 million people to talk about your business and share it across a medium. So amazing opportunity. But yeah, you have to get out of that command and control mindset and stop just relying on old school marketing speak, sales speak. This is my background. My background is in direct mail. I'm a classic example of old school direct marketing copywriting.
Well, it worked then, and it worked for that particular goal, but this is a whole nother game.
I think so. Hey, there are still some verticals online where I know that the old school approach can still work. If I want to sell you an investment newsletter or find you the love of your life or show you how to lose weight, I can probably use a lot of the tricks I used to use 20 years ago. But for most businesses, no. You're far better off engaging with an audience and getting your audience excited about you and talking to them in language that they can recognize. Hey, so you're SEO guys.
Right.
Talking to people in language they recognize. Isn't that a no-brainer for all of us?
It is. But on the SEO front, the SEOs hadn't fully embraced what it means to actually have conversations with the viewer of the page. It was still a mathematical equation of density and repeated terms and phrases. And I mean, we've gotten into the space of understanding what intent is as opposed to just keywords. Okay, so we've gone that distance, but it's still it's a bit elusive. From the analytical standpoint, that there's a particular model of copywriting that can engage, you can have a conversation, and it still rank well and still perform well on the analytics side of things. So help me, help bridge the gap here for me.
All right. So if you want to talk about content and SEO, I'm not an SEO expert, though I know enough about it to get by. Actually, you mentioned Danny Sullivan. I used to speak at his events way back in the early 2000s. But I have a website. I'm a bit of a coffee geek, and I have a website all about coffee. So I have enough traffic for me so I can run a few tests there on content and SEO. And one of the things I've tested repeatedly is on the one hand, I do classic SEO keyword density, all that good stuff, just the mechanics, the technical side of on-page SEO. And then what I do is I reach out to my audience very deliberately and say, hey, ask me any question you like about coffee. And whatever question they ask becomes the headline of a new page. And then they follow up on I say, look, just give me the kind of headline version of your question. And then, give me four or five lines, go into detail if you need to, which they do. The four or five lines of detail become the first paragraph of that page. And that's the question. And then I type in the answer. I never change the language of their question. They always write the headline with their question. But what I do is from the invitations I pitch there, I'm trying to find questions that could go side by side against a page that I've optimized in a classic sense, like how to make the best coffee or which is the best coffee maker, something like that. And what I found is that, and this wasn't always the case. It certainly wasn't the case 10 years ago when I first tried it. It's more and more the case now that a page where I have done nothing in terms of technical optimization, but I have used the visitor's language in the headline in the first paragraph, those pages are winning now. And it's really interesting to me because I've been like you guys, I've been doing this long enough to know that there was a time where you really could play the game with on-page optimization.
Right.
And win. You could win dramatically just by creating a good page. And now I'm just finding that by mirroring the language of my readers, I can actually attract more search engine traffic.
And that's the watershed moment right there. And I think we're having a pivot right now where the old methods and old, I mean, literally, we're just talking about the last 10 years of the wash, rinse, and repeat hook headlines with so many particular headlines inside that. The architecture is right. Roll out a page and tweak it from performance. It's no longer there. It's truly writing intuitive content. And that's where some of us from the mathematical side of things have not really stoked that right side of the brain, so to speak.
Right.
So it's a challenge.
It is. But the way I see this and the way I often talk about this is that back in the day, if we go back 15 years, Google's software, the computers, were not nearly as sophisticated as they are today. And they needed the help of webmasters. So they reached out and said, hey, guys, help us out. Throw some keywords into the title tag. Mm-hmm. Fill out the keyword field. Help us figure out what this page is about. So that's how our industry got to be so technical and mathematical about all of this stuff, is because they said, please play this game to help us. Now, with natural language processing and machine learning and bringing AI into the game,
right,
that is, their end is so much more sophisticated, and they no longer need the help of a webmaster to figure out what a page is about. It's like they don't need the technical stuff anymore. They don't need the keyword in the title tag. They can pretty much read that page the same way a human does and figure out, hey, is this relevant? Is this quality? Is this helpful? Is this useful? And doing it all now from their end. So I think that's the big wake-up call for SEO is that, hey, the days of us having to help Google figure out where a page should rank are gone. The best we can do now is create really, really high-quality pages that are relevant and helpful to our readers. And also that, and this goes back to the issue of voice search, also use natural conversational language that mirrors the language of our readers.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like an RIP to traditional SEO. I mean, you just gave a eulogy right there.
I'm probably overstating it, but that's the way.
No, you're right. You're right. And that's the brutal, honest truth that what we need to embrace is that we have to do the work. It's a safe harbor to just stay inside of mathematical tweaking of a page. You have to learn what your audience is looking for, and that very well may change your entire strategy of how you market. So it could literally, by learning and listening to audiences, a brand could see a ripple effect with everything that they're trying to, the entire schema of marketing that they've been trying to do. Because if they're not meeting their customers where they are, then they're just sounding the megaphone here. And
right.
So it's really kind of the self-aligning type of scenario. If you listen, you'll literally be able to change your course there and connect to that user. So getting to conversational content, Nick, what are some of the problems that you see most websites and the problems in sales copy that they have?
Right. So I got two questions there. The first one, I just want to say, when you use the word listen,
right,
that is the greatest weakness of almost every marketer on the planet. In fact, it's in terms of, I'm a complete conversation geek. I'm fascinated by the role that conversation has in our lives, both personally and professionally. Everything starts with, your marriage, your first date was a conversation. The interview for your job was a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Every significant event in your life starts with a conversation. Your relationships, so the quality or lack of, is based on conversation. Your friendships is conversation. But we're uniformly, well, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I think I'm not alone in actually being really bad at the most important part of conversation, which is listening. A lot of us when we're in conversation tend to jump in. We want to keep pushing our point of view, and we're trying to waiting for the other person to stop talking so we can carry on saying what we want to say. We're not very good listeners. I'm not.
No, trust me.
But like I said, I don't think I'm alone.
Nope.
But so this crosses over. Hey, this overlaps heavily with SEO. It definitely overlaps heavily with marketing. Again, it's this transition from old school broadcast to the web, which is not just two-way, but a multi-way, mm-hmm, interactive, conversational, social
medium is that if you're in a conversational medium, which we are, and it's weird because Google has actually been saying this in different ways for years now, then you don't know what to say if you don't listen first. You've got to listen to the language of your audience. Hey, I'll give you a tip. You said a minute or two ago that opportunities for companies that listen. I can't remember your exact phrase. Mm-hmm. But going back to coffee, I've got a tip. If there's anyone listening out there who's in the business of manufacturing coffee making equipment, I get a lot of inquiries and questions coming into my website where the language goes along the lines of, where can I find a plastics-free coffee maker? People aren't looking for a French press. They're looking for an automatic coffee maker that is plastics-free. Hmm. So there's an opportunity for a company to win big. And the only reason the company would ever realize that was an opportunity is if they'd been listening. Because otherwise, you wouldn't really know that there was actually a ton of people out there who were interested in a plastics-free coffee maker. So companies tend to be really bad at it. And I think when it comes over to the SEO side and the content side, what happens is that we're so used to listening to tools that find keywords for us. And it used to be that we could just throw in a keyword or a truncated phrase into a search engine and get a reasonable result. But in the world of mobile devices and voice search, mm-hmm. we don't talk in keywords. It's just a weird thing. It's a weird convention that we all learned when using a search engine. If it's about voice, we actually make inquiries in full sentences, like, hey, where can I find a new pair of cross-country skis? Whereas in a search engine, I might have typed in nearest cross-country skis. You truncate it. Mm-hmm. So in SEO, we should all be thinking in terms of natural language phrases rather than truncated keywords or key phrases.
No, absolutely.
That's the content side. On the sales side, copywriting as opposed to content writing. That's a whole different story there, because I think online people are becoming more and more resistant to the traditional sales pitch, the traditional language of marketing and sales. And if you don't believe me, then have a look at the latest statistics on installation of ad blockers, mm-hmm. where people get fed up with ads, or have a look at people's behavior in their email inbox, their filtering. Spam buttons being clicked, even when something isn't spam. People are getting very intolerant of that hard charging in your face sales pitch. And it just feels wrong in a social environment. If I'm on Facebook, if I'm in a favorite newsletter, a favorite website, if language feels overly promotional or it feels overly business-like, then there's a kind of dissonance there of like, why are they talking to me like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. My question is, in the tone of business marketing, are we finding ourselves as marketers and brands in a space where not only do we need to be able to listen and answer, but we have to kind of smack our own hand with our kind of wired behavior to want to sell and go unique selling proposition. You literally have to pull everything back and understand that consumers are now looking for kind of value alignment. They're wanting to have a relationship with a brand, not just even have a question answered, because you hit several times. You mentioned the word feel, and there's something there. Is that beyond the conversation, or I should say, beyond the content? There's a feeling that you have to be able to establish with your consumers because they're looking for that, right?
Yes. And I think that again, that's something that the web is good at. That's the opportunity online. It wasn't there offline. It's not there with TV or print or billboards.
No, it's not. So when it gets down to conversational copywriting, now here's the question, is that there's going to be different types of relationships that these consumers would have. And a brand has to select who they're wanting to align with, and they, you know, they use their persona exercise and what have you. But you could easily say that by selecting certain tones and certain messages in your content, right, you could be alienating some consumers while you're pursuing a tighter relationship with others.
Right. Yes.
So I guess the question, well, my further question is, how do brands select that? Because this is completely anti how we marketed for the last 30 years. We were broadly and being very careful not to offend one group as opposed to another. And from the conversational side of things, now we're pursuing that. So how do you go about selecting that and knowing that you got the right one?
Well, I think the number of brands and businesses that basically want to appeal to everyone is fairly narrow. Maybe laundry detergent or Coke or something like that. Yes, you want to appeal. But even then, if you speak to a brand manager at Coke, they'll give you a persona. They'll tell you a certain demographics that they're appealing to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've always been in marketing trying to figure out who our best audience is. And then if you follow the work of Seth Godin, he's constantly talking about the smallest viable audience.
Yep.
Saying, look, get narrow, get narrow, get narrow. Find out who's your tribe, who are the people who will love what you're sharing. And the more narrow you get, then the more you can specifically speak to that audience, speak in a language that resonates with them, that engages with them, that they recognize, that they feel, oh my goodness, this brand gets me. They understand me. And you can be a big company. Hey, Southwest Airlines, certainly in the early years, did a fantastic job of separating themselves from other big brand airlines by not just what they did in the air, but the way they talked about themselves, the way that the language they used. So, you know, even a big brand like an airline, I think, can do that, is to say, hey, we want a particular voice. We're going to appeal to a particular type of traveler. And if some people don't like it, so be it. Hey, the only way to please everyone is to bore everyone, right?
No,
it's true. It's a truism in marketing. If you want to reach everyone and be somehow have something to say to everyone, you've got to be really boring. You've got to take the common, you know, lowest common denominator in terms of message. If you want to amaze and delight your most important constituents, then yeah, you're going to tick off a few people, and that's fine. In fact, it's often, hey, when I talk about conversational copywriting, I have a lot of traditional copywriters giving me pushback, and I'm like, yay, excellent. I'm doing something right. Because if I wasn't irritating some people, then it would mean that I am, you know, I'm pulling my punches. I'm not being honest with myself or my audience.
See, and that's the exact same way I feel about my family. If I'm not irritating my children, that means I'm just not being a good dad.
That's right. That's right.
I really appreciate what you're saying there, Nick. The rewards of alignment and authenticity for a brand far surpass the risks that they can perceive by alienating one user base. I mean, picking your narrow audience and really having a relationship with them and listening to them and then using those questions in a creative and authentic way, there's such a rewarding experience for brands that do it successfully, but they got to do it authentically as well. They can't.
Well, I think so. And also, like, hey, one of the things I get pushback on is people say to me, hey, Nick, you know better than this. You know traditional copywriting. Mm-hmm. If when you're going conversational, it's all kind of sounds West Coast granola, wouldn't it be nice kind of stuff? And I say to them, I say, well, you clearly don't have kids, because if you had kids, you'd understand just how powerful conversational language can be. Mm-hmm. And if you actually listen to your spouse, you listen to your kids, you listen to your friends trying to persuade you, hey, Dad, can I stay up late? Hey, Dad, can I get this as a gift? Conversational language, our natural everyday language, can be incredibly persuasive. We've kind of been in marketing brainwashed to think that you have to use marketing speak. You have to use the tips and tricks,
right.
10 killer headlines and the 10 killer this, that, all that other nonsense. And we've been brainwashed into thinking you have to sound like a marketer.
Or if I go to most companies' about pages, like it seems that they decided they have to sound like some boring business thing. The intolerable business language you find on about pages. So I often challenge companies to, when they're overly promotional or overly business-like in their writing, I say, look, here's a challenge. Go home, sit at your kitchen table, put your partner, your wife, your husband on the other side of the table and read your about page.
Ooh.
And if after about three lines you feel thoroughly embarrassed because you're sounding like an idiot, then go back and rewrite it. Or if it's a sales page, read it out to your mum. And if you find yourself after the headline and intro paragraph apologizing to your mother, saying, well, I'm not really like this. It's just an advertisement. I don't usually sound like a kind of irritating steak knife salesperson. Again, that means that, no, go back and rewrite it, because it's why are you going to write in a way that is just awkward and embarrassing when you can sell in just as powerful a way in persuasive conversational language?
Because that's what we're supposed to do, right, Nick?
Yeah, but hey, that's why I still get up in the morning after 40 years doing this. It's like, there's work to be done, people.
Absolutely.
Got to change some minds out there.
Yeah, and corporate America and corporate world, sorry, have to embrace this. And I think it's being dictated by the consumer is, one, you can't spin us anymore. Two, we want to have relationships with you, and I mean, consumers can sniff out BS. They can sniff out a lack of authentic communication, right? So,
I think so. Is
the combination of social media and content that's the true conversation that brands are having with their consumers? Yeah,
it should be. But when I go to social media, and I think, hang on, this is social media. The first word is social. And then I think, man, why are so many companies just treating this like a broadcast medium? It's like they put out their promotion for their latest sale. Somebody comments, because actually there's a comment function in Facebook companies out there. Mm-hmm. And then does the company reply? Mostly not. They don't engage. Some smart companies do. There are companies that totally get social media and are extremely social, and they build fantastic relationships with their, you know, and engage with their audience, and that audience returns the favor with word of mouth, organic word of mouth through social media, and it works really well. Except about 90% of companies don't bother doing that. They just say, look, we'll buy a Facebook ad. We're not going to invest in actually answering people's questions or engaging with people. Go to the page. We'll just throw more money at it. So that drives me nuts.
It's rudimentary. It's academic, and it's not even academic. It's just they're using the blunt objects of the platform, and they don't realize that there's nuance, and out of nuance comes great relationships and comes new customers, right?
And when you say nuance, it is like good conversational copywriting or content writing. That nuance thing, it's where you show your humanity. Mm. It's where you show perhaps a little imperfection. Mm. I don't know whether you've noticed, like on your podcast, if you make a mistake, if you mess up, do you ever get feedback from people saying, oh, hey, it was like amazing? You know, people love it when we show our vulnerability, when we show our humanity.
Absolutely. I've screwed up more times than I can remember.
Right. So I'll do that. Like I was sitting at a newsletter, and I meant to schedule it for like Tuesday morning, and it went out like at 9 o'clock on Monday evening.
Right.
I pressed the button, and I wrote and said, oh, I'm so sorry. And first of all, people said, hey, don't apologize. It's fine. And then they said, hey, I love that you said sorry. And all of a sudden there was a conversation between me and a bunch of people just because I've made a mistake.
Right.
That's interaction, right? And it's unplanned. And it goes back to what you say about nuance, is that traditional copywriting doesn't really, or traditional marketing tries to keep nuance out of it. It's, they want control over the message, control over the response, control
right.
over the whole customer journey and all that good stuff. And it's like, and I said, guys, you're missing out on the opportunity here online, the opportunity to get into conversation. And I think the best way to develop the habit of getting into conversation with your audience is, one, you got to listen to them so you know what they care about. you got to listen to the language they use so that you can actually connect with them. And then you've got to rewrite your marketing and your business pages and stuff in language that does connect and resonate. Mm. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of rewriting to do out there.
I think you really need to write the new content, Ten Commandments, honestly, because I mean, you're a soft-spoken evangelist, sir, but these are the tenets of new media.
So. They, I think so. And they I truly can get, are. Give me, I try not to drink on podcasts, but give me a few beers and I'll get a lot more.
Okay. All right. So we're going to get Nick back on the horn here soon and we'll have bourbon and really break out the tablets of the beer. Yeah. Nick, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I'm going to wrap up here today. One of the questions we always ask our guests, what really bugs you about your industry right now?
Oh, wow. All right. So you sure we're wrapping up?
No, yeah, we are.
All right. I'll give you what I hate is when people, there are marketers out there who recognize what I'm saying, that understand and agree that a conversation alone is very, very powerful, and then they massively abuse it. So I'll occasionally get an email saying, "Hey, Nick, me and my wife were walking back from the beach this morning, and I suddenly thought of you." So the language is conversational, but as soon as I hear that, read that, I think, you lying. You were not thinking of me. You wrote this email 6 months ago. It sits in this automated funnel that is triggered by something I've done. I'm stuck in this sales funnel from hell for the next 3 years. And you're saying to me, "Yo, Nick, buddy, I was thinking of you." No. So there are marketers out there who absolutely understand the power of natural everyday conversational language, and they abuse it and they stuff it into these automated sequences. And if there was a way for me to kind of hack in and destroy that, I on a bad day, I probably would, because it drives me nuts, because they're taking a beautiful way to connect with readers, which is conversationally one-on-one.
Right.
And they're automating and abusing it. And they're lying in the process with all this, "I was thinking of you," and all that nonsense.
And we all know who they are. They can't hide. Well, Nick, we certainly want to promote to our listeners your conversational copywriting course. That's conversationalcopywriting.com/edge.
Yes, sir.
Is that name? Is that late? Is that?
It's a special landing page for our Edge listeners.
That's a special landing page for his course.
It is just for you. Oh. Just for you. So go to the page and you'll get stuck in my own funnel. No. This is a learning opportunity for you. So you go conversationalcopywriting.com/edge. You can get yourself a free guide to conversational writing, a series of three videos. And yeah, I ask for your first name and your email address. So you will be in my little funnel. But if you get in there, hopefully you'll notice that there's something a little different, and that is that I'm not going to be shouting and screaming at you. I'm not going to be relentlessly pursuing you, and I'm going to speak to you in a tone that is hopefully engaging and respectful and transparent. And if you want to, you know, if you want to take the course, take the course. If you don't, I'm not going to go chasing after you.
Well, that's very polite of you, sir. So we certainly want our users to go over to conversationalcopywriting.com/edge. Be sure to track down Nick on his Twitter at Nick Usborne, USBORNE. You can also find him on the socials, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. I am so sorry that I have to cut this short. I could go on talking to this guy forever. you know me. I mean, this is fertile ground here. So, Nick, we'd love to have you back on the show. You game for that sometime in the future?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today, and we'll certainly follow up with you on social. Thanks for giving this type of that landing page to our audience. We really do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All
Thank
right.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're more than welcome. Thanks for listening to Edge of the Web Radio. And a special thank you to our colleagues at Site Strategics and our guests, of course, Nick Usborne. Make sure to check out all the must-see videos and much more over at edgeofthewebradio.com. That's edgeofthewebradio.com. Who are we talking to this week?
Thursday, we're talking to Ashley Berman-Hale. She's the technical SEO lead at DeepCrawl.
Cool.
She will be interviewing John Mueller the day before we talk to her. So I assume there'll be some recap we can do with her about that and much more in the SEO world.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Much more in the SEO world. Certainly, we want to take conversational copywriting to heart. And this next show is going to be the last of 2018.
That's right, yeah.
All right, so get your comments in. Let us know what you wish for Christmas, as well as what you're looking at for digital marketing tactics in 2019. And we'll talk to you real quick. Do not be a piece of cyber driftwood. Bye-bye.